To clarify for our viewers, Springfield, Ohio does have a large number of Haitian migrants who have legal status, temporary protected status.
Well, Margaret, but
thank you.
Senator, we have so much to get to.
Margaret, I think it's important because
we're going to turn out of the economy. Thank you.
Margaret, the rules were that you guys weren't going to fact check. And since you're fact checking me, I think it's important to say what's actually going on. So there's an application called the CBP One app where you can go on as an illegal migrant, apply for asylum or apply for parole and be granted legal status at the wave of a Kamala Harris open border wand. That is not a person coming in, applying for a green card and waiting for 10 years. That
Thank
is the
you,
facilitation
Senator.
Of illegal immigration, Margaret, by
Thank
our
you,
own
Senator,
leadership.
Thank you, Senator, for describing the legal process. We have
Kamala
so much
Harris
to get to, Senator.
Pathway.
Those
we
laws have
so
been
much
on the books since 1990.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The CBP One app has not been on the books
since 1990. It's something that Kamala Harris created, Margaret.
Gentlemen, the audience can't hear you because your mics are cut. We have so much we want to get to. Thank you for explaining the legal process. Nora.
Thank you, Margaret. The economy.
Well, because she is condescending. I mean, I watched this debate. I didn't want to. I'm not going to lie, because I wasn't looking forward to it. I wasn't expecting any, you know, humdinger moments out of it. And I watched this debate. And I don't know. Did we learn anything? I don't know. But I thought the moderators. I will say this. I thought it was actually a particularly polite debate. Believe it or not, I can say that. It was a particularly polite debate. But that moment when they cut him off and he's trying to correct how things are recorded on that CPB app, which we've talked about here before in this space when we've had on Border Patrol members. And, you know, we've talked about it before. And it's he's correct, because if you're going to fact check somebody, you know, if you're going to be the moderators and you're going to fact check someone, then you need to be accurate when you're doing it. You know, you can't just be blowing smoke out your backside. You need to be accurate when you're doing it. And I mean, clearly, I don't think that they were. And that was, I think, there were several moments in that debate where they would ask Waltz a question and they would load it up so as to protect him, because any kind of pushback, you know, he would crumple on. He looked nervous when he walked out there. He did. You could say otherwise. He looked nervous. He was rattled. If you get the Substack newsletter, I talked about all of that in there, how I thought, you know, he looked like he was already tweaked. I didn't get the jazz hands, you know, opening that I really wanted, but, you know, whatever. You know, not everything can be about me, I guess. And he just looked goofy, I thought. And he also needs to be told when he is on stage, he needs to be made aware of the fact that the camera, when you're on stage, even when you are, you know, you're not the one talking and you know that the camera is on your opponent, and they had to tell him that it was a side by side, right? Didn't they tell him, you think that it was a side? Because it was like he wasn't aware of his own expression when he was on. It was like he wasn't aware of what his face was doing when he was on camera. And I just think that looks weird. And I just feel like that made him, it just made him look goofy, and it just didn't make him look prepared. And I don't know. I mean, we're going to dive into all of this, and I'm going to tell you what I thought the best and worst moments were, what I think that this means. I don't think that this moves the needle at all for any, you know, the presidential candidates. I really don't. But I also think there's a couple of other things in play that extend beyond 2024. And there were a couple of disappointments. And I'm going to be really honest about this stuff. So welcome to the program, first and foremost. Dana Lash with you. And we're at the top of this first hour, Channel 347 DirecTV. You can also find us on Rumble, et cetera, all that good stuff. So I watched the debate. And again, if you get the newsletter, I sent this out in the Substack newsletter that I, you know, if you sign up for it. So you got my early impressions of this debate. So you kind of know where I'm going with some of this. Because I don't think that Tim Walz I don't think he made a major problem for himself except with two gaffes. And I do feel like, you know, he just, he could have gotten all wound up. And I think that he has the potential for someone to make him mad, but he didn't take that bait. I thought that he didn't take the bait. He didn't go into getting ticked off when he could have. And he kind of kept his cool for the most part, right? And I just think that, well, we're going to play some of the audio. Let's play some of the audio. Because this was his worst moment, the China stuff. Listen to this. This is when he was asked about China. Audio soundbite 3. This was wild. Watch this.
Give a minute.
You
know,
Governor, you say trust the experts. But those same experts for 40 years said that if we shipped our manufacturing base off to China, we'd get cheaper goods. They lied about that. They said if we shipped our industrial base off to other countries, to Mexico and elsewhere, it would make the middle class stronger. They were wrong about that. They were wrong about the idea that if we made America less self-reliant, less productive in our own nation, that it would somehow make us better off, and they were wrong about it. And for the first time in a generation, Donald Trump had the wisdom and the courage to say to that bipartisan consensus, we're not doing it anymore. We're bringing American manufacturing back. We're unleashing American energy. We're going to make more of our own stuff. And this isn't just an economic issue. I mean, I've got 3 beautiful little kids at home, 7, 4, and 2, and I love them very much, and I hope they're in bed right now. But look, so many of the drugs, the pharmaceuticals that we put in the bodies of our children are manufactured by nations that hate us. This has to stop, and we're not going to stop it by listening to experts.
So he's talking to him about China, and then, well, I wanted the Waltz one, when Waltz kind of just like falls apart on this is audio. Yeah, audio soundbite. This is a long one though. Can we just get the part where he's like, I misspoke, and we'll play the full one later, because I'm not, it's already 12 minutes into the segment, and I don't want to play a minute and God help me 2:45. I'm not going to play the whole segment. That needs to be way shorter. This, but he completely fell apart on it. He completely fell apart when he was asked about it. He got pushed one time, and he just fell apart when he was asked about China. And we'll get that when we got it queued up. Do you have it? Go ahead and hit this.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
All right. Well, let's cut this because I wanted the video of them on there also for the simulcast. We'll go back into this. This is a huge part of the huge part of it. But we can't play 2 minutes and 45 seconds. We're going to get into some of the issues that I thought each of them flubbed on. I thought that Vance wiped the floor with them on immigration, and I thought he wiped the floor with them on the economy as well. The CBS News Post debate poll said it was close, but Vance won. And I said too in the in my rundown, I thought that Vance won on, I thought his substance was better, and I felt his substance was better, and I also thought that he didn't make any gaffes, major gaffes, like Waltz did. I thought that there were 2 points that Vance performed very poorly: guns and abortion. And I'm going to deep dive into those. And I don't, when I'm evaluating a Republican candidate, I don't just evaluate them next to the Republican. I evaluate them knowing what the GOP can serve and the standards that I have for my candidates. And I think anybody can look great next to a sack of potatoes like Tim Walz. I thought Vance was, he's a great debater. I thought that his biggest opponent on that stage was the moderators. I thought he handled them very well. He would answer the question how he wanted to answer, and then he would bring it back around to the original question asked, repeat that question, and then answer it after he set the context. That was very well done. He did that throughout the night. I thought that he flubbed the abortion answer. I thought that that was actually his worst answer. He was not prepared enough and familiar enough with the cases that Waltz cited so as to quickly, efficiently, and without question, shut those cases down. And we've covered, Lorraine's got piece after piece up on Substack, chapter and verse, where we've gone through those individuals that Tim Walz brought up. Those weren't cases, those weren't abortion cases. It was medical malpractice. And the 2 of the women that he cited had taken the abortion pill. The one woman particularly that Walz cited 3 times, took not one but two abortion pills. She waited hours after she started experiencing the consequential side effects that everybody warns about with this pill. And then she waited hours to go to the hospital. But at that time, sepsis had already set in, and she was bleeding and she was in bad shape. So that has nothing to do with abortion and whether or not it's run by the states. That was her taking the abortion pill, two of them, her not seeking medical care. And then for whatever reason, even though she had no viable life inside of her at all whatsoever, the staff at that hospital was slow to do anything. And it wasn't because there was any kind of law preventing them from doing so. And so I felt if Vance was better prepared on those cases, he would have shut that down. And so I thought that was a disappointing moment. Those two answers, though, deserve their own segment. We're going to talk about that after headlines. I also thought that the couple of different, as it relates to immigration, this was audio soundbite 4. Someone finally asks about those missing kids. Listen.
So first of all, Margaret, before we talk about deportations, we have to stop the bleeding. We have a historic immigration crisis because Kamala Harris started and said that she wanted to undo all of Donald Trump's border policies. 94 executive orders suspending deportations, decriminalizing illegal aliens, massively increasing the asylum fraud that exists in our system. That has opened the floodgates. And what it's meant is that a lot of fentanyl is coming into our country. I had a mother who struggled with opioid addiction and has gotten clean. I don't want people who are struggling with addiction to be deprived of their second chance because Kamala Harris let in fentanyl into our communities at record levels. So you've got to stop the bleeding. You've got to reimplement Donald Trump's border policies, build the wall, reimplement deportations. And that gets me to your point, Margaret, about what do we actually do? So we've got 20, 25 million illegal aliens who are here in the country. What do we do with them? I think the first thing that we do is we start with the criminal migrants. About a million of those people have committed some form of crime in addition to crossing the border illegally.
And he brought it back to the original question. It's a long bite, but he brought it back to the original question. And that was good because he set the context and then he would bring it back. You set the context and then you would bring it back. By the way, a couple of people asked me about the screenshots that were on the Substack, my newsletter post. That literally was from last night. Where Walls is looking like a loon. That's not Photoshopped. You watched it. You can attest. He was like totally unaware of what he looked like on camera. Oh my gosh, the memes. So we've got a lot to deep dive in. We're also going to give you the latest on Iran versus Israel. And we're going to also dive into the Hurricane Helene aftermath. We've got that for you as well. We've got, like I said, the hurricane relief. We've got Israel, Iran, the debate, the election. I've got a couple of new polls for you. Nothing's going to be on this. I don't think the VP thing is really going to move anything. I do think it's going to help with name recognition for each of those candidates. So we'll discuss that. But we're going to deep dive into the best and worst answers coming up because I'm a little concerned about two of the answers because they're major issues for the right. Major issues, like keystone issues for the right. Life can take a toll on our bodies. There's no way around it. And whether it's just sitting for hours on end at your computer or if you're working a physical job, over time, your body pays the price. There is, however, an effective way to turn back the clock on pain. Relief Factor. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor helps support your body's response to inflammation. And the difference, instead of just masking pain, Relief Factor helps eliminate it for good, and it's 100% drug-free. My husband Chris has taken Relief Factor with incredible results. So if the pains that come with living a full life are affecting you, do as many others have done and turn back the clock on pain with Relief Factor. Their three-week quick start is just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. And when you feel good, it's amazing how much more you get out of life. Visit relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF. Try it for only $19.95 and turn back the clock on pain with Relief Factor. Relieffactor.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So I thought this was funny because they are saying now that Gen X is the most stressed generation alive, but they're also the best at handling it. And we're also called the coolest generation, just gotta say. Gen X, people who are born between 65 and 79. I'm there, so stop gatekeeping. I barely got in, but I'm there. Stop it. It's official now. I just cited this a very official news article, Kane. It's America's goofy middle children sandwiched between the boomers and millennials. And Gen X is all individualistic, nonconformist. I mean, you know, we did punk zines and tech startups, so everybody can step off. It's aloof cool, right? They're also really self... We're the latchkey kids. According to one marketing study, Gen Z or Gen X went through its all-important formative years as one of the least parented, least nurtured generations in U.S. history. It was the first generation that experienced both parents working outside the home. So we had to be self-sufficient for survival. That's why we can handle stress. And in Gen X fashion, we don't like to let people see that we are stressed. That's a huge study, and they're totally correct. This is weird. A long-lost seafloor discovered beneath the Pacific Ocean could rewrite Earth's history. Are there aliens? Scientists have mapped it. They found that it was unusually thicker and cooler than the surrounding areas, which would signal aliens. The ancient seafloor challenges existing theories about Earth's interior structures. Is that where King Kong lives down there? Anyway, it's the Nazca Plate and the East Pacific Rise. So if that's, you know, your jam, it's kind of interesting. I don't care about this chick who left the Washington Post. She's literally nobody. Green Day was banned from Las Vegas radio stations because Billy Joe Armstrong is a D-bag. He called the city a poo hole. He didn't say it like that, but he did. And he got mad. And I just don't know why. I feel like he's got an arrested development because he's like 70,000 years old and he dresses like a 20-year-old in 2003. And it's just the height of cringe. It's the height of cringe. We got a lot more on the way. I can't carry everywhere I would like to carry because we got some dummies out there who think that signs are going to protect you. Oh, I got a gun-free zone sign here. You're magically protected. Like it puts up some sort of invisible Klingon shield around the whole premises, which as we all know, it does not. So in those instances, when you are barred from carrying, you would like to have another option, would you not? So this is where the burner gun comes in. Burner gun is a different type of non-firearm firearm. It shoots chemical irritant projectiles that can disable threats from like 50 feet away. And they have a bunch of different models. The Byrna SD is the most popular model that they have. In fact, I got a couple of friends who live in DC and New York that got the Byrna SD because they didn't want to be turned into statistics by their state. And the Byrna SD is the best-selling self-defense option. There's no background checks. There's no waiting periods. It's legal in all 50 states. It ships right to your front porch. And like I said, 5-round capacity on this Byrna SD. Stun guns, you got 1 or 2 shots. Byrna, you got 5. Chemical irritant projectiles, and it, like I said, it'll disable a threat from up to 50 feet away. Learn more about the Byrna gun. Visit Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off of your purchase. That's BYRNA. Check out these other options that you have, right? These less restricted options that the state can't bar you from taking at Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off.
Right now, is Kamala trying to earn the dumb vote? Kamala Harris is pitching $25,000 for first-time homebuyers while trying to build millions of new homes with government funds, all while using small businesses as straw men.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Little Prodigy. Boy, this song created some problems back in the day. It's they're smacking an unfortunate person up, is what this song is titled. And, you know, it made me think of, I thought of this video, and I thought of this song when I was thinking of this Doug Emhoff story. Of course, you know I was going to go there. Welcome back to the show. It's Dana Lash. What'd you think it was? Big Bird? Kamala Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff, forcefully slapped ex-girlfriend for flirting with another man in a booze-fueled assault after a date to a star-studded gala. Well, there's a headline. So Doug Emhoff, who's 59, slapped the woman in her face so hard she spun around while this is the whitest thing I've ever heard. While waiting in the valet line late at night after a May 2012 Cannes Film Festival event in France. Democrat white, by the way. One of her friends told the Daily Mail that the woman, and there's photos of them, but they've blurred out her face. The woman called him immediately after the incident, sobbing in her cab, described the assault. They're not naming her. She's a successful New York attorney. They're calling her by a pseudonym, Jane. A second friend said that Jane, who had been dating Emhoff for 3 months, also told her about the alleged violence at the time. Who wouldn't think that a guy who got his nanny pregnant with his first wife would slap up a chick that he's dating, you know, 3 months into the relationship in Cannes? I'm just wondering. I mean, it's believe all women, right? Are we still on that line, or are we not doing that anymore? Is it still Me Too? Yeah, I mean, they can't, conveniently, after that whole thing fell apart, they suddenly couldn't figure out how to define women, but okay. So, I mean, is it believe all women or not? Because Kamala Harris is grilling Brett Kavanaugh being a rapist, and here you got Doug Emhoff impregnating nannies and slapping bitches up. I'm just wondering, like, what's, you know, is it believe all women or not? I'm just curious. I got questions for a few millions of my friends. We're all wondering here. So, I do think, I mean, I just feel like we got to bring that back, right? We got to bring that back because, you know, remember Kamala Harris grilled the ever-loving tar out of Kavanaugh. She accused him of being a rapist and all this other stuff. So I feel like this is fair game, Kane.
Yep.
Fairsies, gamesies. It's second to gentlemen. He's redefining masculinity, don't you know, Doug Emhoff? He's redefining masculinity. You know, toxic masculinity to the left is when a man behaves chivalrously. You know, if you have chivalrous behavior, you behave in a chivalrous fashion, you know, save the world from Nazis. That's apparently considered toxic. But if you impregnate your kid's nanny while you're married to your first wife, and then you slap up your girlfriend at Cannes Film Festival valet line, that's apparently redefining masculinity. Who knew? I know, it's, and maybe we're in a backwards world. I don't know, but that's the D's, them's the rules, right?
Is it just me, or they just keep moving the goalposts like that all the time?
Yeah, I mean, you can drive a woman into a pond to die, and that's not toxic, right? You know, but you go liberate France from the Nazis, and there you go. Toxic masculinity, you know what I'm saying? Good night. I just, you know, I'm going to point that out there. Just throw it out there. Redefining it. So I can't wait until she's asked about that one in the press conference that she definitely will never have, or the next sit down that she totally won't have. Ooh. All right. So a couple of things. I know we're going to follow the latest with the strike as well. There's lots of stuff we're following. This debate last night, good and bad. The worst moment was, got to give that ribbon to Tim Walz, who just started falling all over himself when he was asked, well, why did you lie about China? I've never heard anyone take so long to say that they didn't lie. Listen to this. This is so
Governor,
dumb.
Just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protest, went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
I mean, you could have just said that you lied. I mean, they asked him and he's like, well, it was the best of times. It was the worst. Just say that you lied. Well, I misspoke. You lied. And then, you know, he told on himself because he was like, you know, and I, how did he put it? I quoted it at the time. He had said at one point, he was like, yeah, I sometimes I slip into the rhetoric. Well, you just admitted that you lied then at that point. I mean, that's, what in the world is your damage, dude? You just admitted that you lied. That's all you got to do, all you got to say. But that was a really, that was awkward. That was a very awkward moment for him. And there were a lot of very awkward moments. Yeah, he didn't have a lot of room last night except to play the yuk, I'm a knucklehead shtick. But then he was like, well, I get caught up in the rhetoric. Okay, you lied. And then he tried to cite scripture. Which, as you know, if you're familiar with The Merchant of Venice, even the devil can quote scripture. But there you go. He's, I don't think that he didn't get angry. And I was actually kind of anticipating for, I was waiting for him to do so. Because from what I know, he's got a short temper. And he just seems like a jackwagon. He's one of those dudes, right? He just seems like that. But he didn't take the bait. And he was very disciplined in that regard. And so was J.D. Vance. And J.D. Vance, you know, stayed on point. Now, I'm going to say something that's unpopular. His answer on guns was horrible. Yes, Walz was. Walz's answer on guns was bad. But I wasn't impressed with J.D. Vance's either. I don't think he's a gun control guy. He's not a gun guy, though. That's evident. And when I say that he's not a gun guy, I mean, he's not a hunter. He probably doesn't shoot regularly. I don't demand that you be a hunter or that you go out and shoot regularly in order for me to like you as a candidate. But I do demand that you agree with me on these issues relating to our enumerated rights. And I do agree. I do demand that you don't use the language of the left. So here was the question that was asked. And we'll get into all the other stuff. But this is where I'm going to be. I, I'm going to call balls and strikes on this stuff. And this was the first time Vance was really tested like this, I think, on this issue. So this was, what was the, it was like 11,400,083 audio soundbite. The one is it Nora is asking the question, Nora O'Donnell. And first off, the question's wrong. Audio soundbite 19. Go ahead and kick this one. 19,000, million, 11,040,000. That one.
Turn now to America's gun violence epidemic. The leading cause of death for children and teens in America is by firearm.
Okay, that's wrong. And right out of the gate, when that question came in, that should have immediately been established, and it wasn't. Why is that wrong? Here's why that question is a presupposition based on fraudulent, not even evidence, just based on lies. First off, it is not the leading cause of death. The only way that they can make it the leading cause of death is, and this is what the CDC did, they redefined the age of a quote unquote child to go all the way up till 20. So 18 to 20 year olds are now factored into that average. When you remove that age demographic, the 18 to 20 year olds, guess what? That falls down behind car accidents and drownings. Now, let's go back to that subset. I've written about this. It's in one of my books. There's a lot of evidence on this. So I'm not making anything up that's not publicly available on the internet, according to the CDC and the DOJ and the FBI's own criminal statistics. This subset, this age subset, the 18 to 20 year olds, why does it inflate that number so much? Because it's gang and drug violence. And it completely correlates. When you look at the numbers given by the CDC for 18 and younger, and then you add in the FBI criminal statistics, FBI, the uniform crime reports, when you add in the publicly available crime data it tracks, the CDC inflates that number by including 18 to 20 year olds and defining them as children. That is why they then can say, oh, well, look, it's the leading cause of death for children, because they redefined it. Again, when you remove that subset, then 18 and under, it falls behind the child, the leading cause of death falls behind automobiles and drownings. Now, suicides are also factored in there. That is a mental health issue. In fact, suicides comprise 1/3 of that statistic for that subset. Now, that's a whole other conversation. But the reason it is inflated is to fearmonger and scare people into thinking that their children could be statistics. When these incidents, although one is too many, are incredibly rare and they're always preventable. But we don't talk about the preventable aspects of it, which is one of the things that Vance did touch on. What I didn't like that Vance did, I was not a fan of his language on this, is he borrowed the language of the left. He used the language of the left in his response on firearms. He said the phrase gun violence epidemic. And he and Walz were very nice to each other on this. And he also used the phrase illegal guns. Here's why I have a major problem with this. Again, I don't demand that you be as hardcore about 2A as I am for my support, but you do need to believe that my enumerated right should not be infringed upon. Language like gun violence epidemic, language like illegal guns, those are words of the left. You cannot win a debate on this issue when you are already validating your opponent's points because you're incorporating their rhetoric into your argument. This is rhetoric 101. For instance, there's no such thing as quote unquote illegal guns. A gun isn't an inanimate object. There is criminal possession, but there isn't an illegal gun. By saying the phrase, illegal gun instead of criminal possession, you are ascribing a moral aesthetic to an inanimate object, which is exactly what gun controllers want to do, because that continues to validate the anti-gun language, which dictates that inanimate objects somehow possess the ability to influence the carrier of said object towards criminal behavior. A gun itself is not illegal. It cannot be so. The legality or illegality is determined by the willful way in which a person chooses to use or acquire it per law. And there's no gun violence epidemic. There is, and this is where Vance left a ton of meat on the bone. I don't know how you don't get into Tim Walz's behavior during Minnesota, the riots. Vance left that meat on the bone. There is, and this is where he could have done it. There isn't a gun violence epidemic. There is an epidemic of lawlessness that is brought on by the sort of restorative justice that's supported by Tim Walz and Kamala Harris. Look at the riots in Minnesota. How many of those people were not even arrested, not even detained? Kamala Harris was promoting their bail fund, the bail fund of people who burned down entire communities, historically black communities, I might add. You know, the communities that Gwen Walz says she enjoyed smelling burning, and that's why she left her windows open. He left a lot of meat on the bone there, and that was very disappointing. I expect Walz to be anti-gun, but I don't expect my Republican candidate to validate their language by speaking recklessly on it. Because we are in, it's a match where you cannot give any kind of ground. And words do matter, folks. Because when it comes to this sort of thing, when it comes to gun law, the words you use invoke different aspects of the law. And with it, different penalties and consequences. And with that, different abridgments of your rights. So you're damn right, language is important. In some instances, it's everything. Now, with this, we've got, I've got so much more, and we're not even near anywhere where we need to be. Oh, we got so much. Because I wanted to touch on this real quick. Play 18 for me. It's real quick. This is 18. I'm going to play two cuts before we go to break. First is 18. This is what I'm talking about, ascribing a moral aesthetic to an inanimate object. Listen.
And I think what we end up doing is we start looking for a scapegoat. Sometimes it just is the guns. It's just the guns. And there are things that you can do about it.
Okay, what does that mean? Sometimes it's just the guns. So you're telling me that when a person is fine and on the track of good behavior until somehow they acquire a firearm and then they immediately turn bad? Because that's what he's suggesting here, which gets into my whole argument that you do not ascribe human characteristics on inanimate objects because you're validating what they're saying there. There was no follow-up to that. I thought Vance could have done that. And what do you mean? It's not the guns. Sometimes it's just recidivism. Sometimes it's the breakdown of law and order. Sometimes it's the breakdown of the American family. Sometimes it's the breakdown of good parenting. But that was meat left on the bone. I got a lot more to hit. We got abortion coming up. We got the economy. We got the latest with the strike. Iran versus Israel. All sorts of things to touch on. Education is so unbelievably important to preserving liberty. You cannot preserve liberty if you don't know what you need to know. If you don't understand how your government works. If you don't understand the republic, how we are founded as a republic that incorporates some democratic principles. And Hillsdale College was founded in 1844 as a small Christian classical liberal arts college in southern Michigan to offer the sort of education needed to preserve those liberties. And it holds true to their mission today. They have all kinds of free resources. There's Free Speech Digest and Primus. There are educational podcasts. But they also have a free pocket constitution that they're handing out. And you can get yours for free, free shipping even. They don't sell your info. It's Dana4FORHillsdale.com to get your free pocket constitution. And if you have one, just get another one and give it to somebody you know who doesn't have one. Because it's a great way to share these crucial documents with other people, including the next generation. So get your free copy of the Pocket Constitution from our friends at Hillsdale while supplies last. Visit Dana4FORHillsdale.com. Fill out the form. They're not selling your info. They'll mail you. You get free shipping. They'll mail it to you. You don't pay anything. Now, like I said, it's not going to last long, so grab yours quick. It's your Pocket Constitution now at Dana4Hillsdale.com.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Like muting power.
Once, yeah.
And I actually think if you're a woman, that might be the worst moment J.D. Vance had, because he was going to mansplain right over that mute button. He was, and again, I don't pretend to know how everyone will react to this. I think that a lot of women in positions of authority that should command respect just by virtue of that dynamic will see themselves in some dude that disrespected them and talked over. I mean, there was a moment like that with them vice
presidential. There were two dudes on stage. Where was the sexism? Golly, does everything have vagina, vagina, vagina? Vagina, just shut up already. I'm so tired. If there ain't a woman on stage as a candidate, then they'll try to fabricate it and appropriate it and project it onto the moderators. They're big girls. And if there's a woman who can't stand being talked over on a debate stage, if that offends her, then get your ass off the stage. You're not grown up enough to be on it. This is a grown folks event, okay? Grown folks event. We don't have time for any of this stuff. Jiminy Christmas. I mean... No, I can't, man. I just can't even. Yes. It's just so annoying. Can just people, can we just not have that for one time? Even when you got two dudes up there, somebody's got to inject sexism. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Waltz did kind of act like a bit of a bee at some. There was one point where his mask slipped. Did you see it? You could tell he's starting to get mad. It's like someone nudge him and tell him, dude, the camera is on your face. It's on your face. Stop it.
I saw a little bit ago the Babylon Bee had put out that DOJ was going after J.D. Vance for beating up three women last night. And I couldn't have laughed out loud.
It just hit me. Yeah, that's true.
But internally I did.
Golly. Well, we got a lot more on the way. But we're also going to talk about something else, too, that we're going to have a conversation about at some point in the next year. And it's how the George W. Bush 2.0, quote-unquote, compassionate conservatism is making a comeback within the GOP. You know, the ideology that spawned the Tea Party movement? I'm going to explain how, because I've been seeing it and hearing it a lot lately. And it's from people who I guess didn't experience it the first time around, so they think it's new. So we're going to touch about on all of that and a lot more. We got the strike. We got Iran. We've got the debate still. We got a lot of stuff. Stick with us. Second, Tax Network USA wants to help you if you're being harassed by the IRS. Maybe you have back taxes. Maybe you owe some money to the government. You don't have to let them catch you off guard. You got an October 15th deadline coming up. Now's the time to act. Failing to file or make payments, you could have some serious consequences, as you know. Schedule a complimentary consultation. Call 1-800-958-1000 or visit tnusa.com/Dana and work with their expert professionals. They're dedicated in securing the best possible resolution for your tax issues, making sure you get the most favorable outcome. Whether or not you owe $10,000 or $10 million, regardless of whether it's for personal or business, they have the tools and experience to handle any situation, whether you're able to pay or on a fixed income. Tax Network USA provides tailored solutions to help you resolve your tax burdens effectively. So don't miss this October 15th deadline. It's right around the corner and the clock is ticking. If you don't have your stuff submitted and you don't have your documents organized, you need TNUSA, the tax relief experts. TNUSA.com/Dana, 1-800-958-1000. Call for a free consultation. They'll guide you through a few simple questions to determine how much you can save. Act now before it's too late. TNUSA.com/Dana. Welcome back to the program, top of the second hour. I'm your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here joining you to get you all up to speed. We watched that debate last night. We're also following the latest with the strike, the longshoremen strike, Iran versus Israel. We've also got the disaster, ongoing recovery from Hurricane Helene. We're going to get into all of that. But first up, recapping some of this debate, going over the worst and best moments. And I said before, I think it's easy to go up against somebody like Walz. He played it safe, and the biggest hits that he took last night are when he messed up about China and wouldn't admit that he lied, and we played that. And then there was this really wild gaffe when they were talking about, this was mass casualty incidents. And this is audio soundbite 17. I actually, when I first heard this, I couldn't believe that I had heard it. And I sort of asked X about it because I could not believe that I heard this, but that's what he said. Listen.
So I've become friends with school shooters. I've seen it. Look, the NRA, I was the NRA
what?
Guy for
a long time.
He's
become friends with school shooters. I thought, what? What? And he never actually walked back to clean that up. That's just hung out there. That was a very wild gaffe. And of course, it's now making the headlines. So there were some, I thought that Vance, like I said, if I had to pick a victor, I would give it to Vance for having more coherent answers, and he didn't make the big gaffes. He didn't make two major gaffes, the trying to screw up and the friends of school shooters thing that Waltz did. But I absolutely think that Vance missed some opportunities to verbally beat the snot out of Waltz. I absolutely do. I also, and I'm going to say this, and this is not going to be popular, but I'm warning you, because we did all back this. Why are you doing that? We did all this back in 09. Actually, it started before 09. Do you remember when the Tea Party first kicked off? And I was one of the original people that was on that phone call that Sunday. We were arranging stuff for that very next day. And it actually was in response to, and I hate this phrase, compassionate conservatism. Because that is a phrase that George W. Bush came up with. And I'm not, I mean, he seems like a very nice person. I disagree with some of his policies, clearly. Including this whole compassionate conservatism thing. Because it's neither compassionate nor conservatism. It's a fun name for big government. That's what it is. It's the compassionate conservatism of making the government pay for family leave and basically glorified corporate welfare. It's welfare, but just you're pushing it through the corporate veins, so it counts less as welfare. It's the too big to fail. It's all of that stuff, right? It's the kind of thinking that was dominant within the Republican Party for a long time that made a lot of us dissatisfied with it. That's the reason the Tea Party started. Democrats tried to co-opt it and say that the Tea Party began because of Barack Obama. The Tea Party began as a rebellion against big government republicanism. And after Barack Obama was into office, when he continued those policies, because big government republicanism, there's another name for it. Do you want to know what it's called? Democrat. And when he continued some of those policies, we're like, see, we told you. And we kept protesting them. And then it was like, oh, they're just protesting him because he's a black president. No, we actually started before he was running. Thanks. So I say this now because I feel like a lot of people, or some people on the right, not all, but some people who weren't there back then, who think this is, well, who believe this is all new to them. They are unfamiliar with the history of quote unquote compassionate conservatism being code for big government, which is code for Democrat. They're unfamiliar with this. They are unfamiliar with how, back in the day, many Republicans were arguing that, well, sometimes the government has to intervene. Or how they were arguing on behalf of government intervention if it was advantageous to a Republican policy, without realizing that you're opening the door for Democrats to exploit it the exact same way, which they did. A lot of these people who are here now weren't in this fight then, and they think this is all brand new. And because they have not seen the logical conclusion of it, they don't find anything wrong with it. Now, the reason I bring this up is because one of the issues that this ideology plagues the most is the idea of family leave, which I don't even know why it's an issue. We don't like government involved in business, correct? Except what, with this? Apparently so. There was a question that was asked about paid family leave. And this is, there are two instances. Now, I've said I don't need to keep, you know, patting Vance on the back. I think he took the debate, like I said, coherent answer, needed to make gaffes. But there were three issues that he wasn't great on. Abortion, the guns issue, he could have been stronger, and he could not have used the language of the left. This issue, I was very disappointed on, and it's the family leave one. Here is part of his answer, because he was asked about that. Juan's got some of it. Check this out.
Do you support a national paid leave program? And if so, for how long should employers be mandated to pay their employees while they are home taking care of their newborn? You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, well, first of all, Margaret, a number of my Republican colleagues and some Democrats, too, have worked on this issue. And I think there is a bipartisan solution here because a lot of us care about this issue. I mean, look, I speak from this very personally because I'm married to a beautiful woman who is an incredible mother to our three beautiful kids, but is also a very, very
I think immediately was wrong.
And I'm
bipartisan
so
answer. I know this personally, too, because I've given birth twice and I've worked. Now, he also said the quote, and this is one of the things that he said last night, and I have it isolated here. He said the quote, we're going to have to spend more money. We're going to have to induce more people to provide childcare services. I don't know what the where is in this, and I don't know what the how means. That was never clarified. Here's my point on all this. If companies want to offer childcare, etc., voluntarily to be competitive, great, more power to them. That is well within their right to do so. The government should not mandate that businesses do this. This is nothing more than big government nonsense, and it's defended by some on the right as quote-unquote compassionate, just like Bush 2.0. Welfare is welfare, regardless if it is forced through corporate or offered as an entitlement. It is not a small government position to demand that government mandate businesses to help people and accommodate family planning. It is weird to complain about big government while begging the government to get bigger by mandating that businesses accommodate family planning. That doesn't make any sense. Now, I know that mine is not a very particularly popular take on this right now, but I would rather be consistent than be liked. By the way, the correct and only answer on this is this. If businesses want to offer this voluntarily, so be it. But in the meantime, stop taking in so much of our taxes. Stop taking our money in tax so families can either afford childcare or afford to have a two-parent, one-income household, if they so choose, should they want to be able to have a parent at home with their children. And I'm going to tell you what, these businesses, I don't know what some of these people think businesses get started for. The people on the left think that businesses are created and should be created only to be charitable. You don't need to pay for this stuff. Just give everybody $1 million an hour, whatever. Some on the right think that, well, then if the government doesn't force them to do it, are they still, then how is it going to work? Look, if I was a CEO and I wanted an employee that had a particular talent, and I knew that in order to get that talent, I would have to offer certain perks. Like if that talent wanted to have a family, then I would absolutely do it because my business would benefit. Businesses are going to make decisions that grow businesses because it's fiscally responsible, which is a conservative trait. And if they voluntarily want to offer that, if they want to go after people that have proven skills and that are worth it, businesses are going to do that. They're already doing it now without government having to mandate it. And a lot of these people don't realize some of these small businesses cannot afford to pay long-term leave for people who are not generating income. They don't understand what it's like to make payroll. They don't understand what a small business owner pays to replace that employee. You're paying two salaries for one job. That is not a small government constitutional conservative position. It is a Democrat position that is wrapped up in the veneer of quote unquote compassionate conservatism in order to render it more palatable to Republican voters. But it's a Democrat policy. And so that is why I think, and he had long answers on this. I thought his answer was wrong. He defaulted to government on his answer. That bothered me because we went through this once already, and it's why Republicans got beaten in the aughts. There's no point in securing a legacy if you're going back to Bush 2.0 because that was defeated once. We saw how that plays out. And that stuff makes me nervous because I don't want to be in a position with all this stuff where you defeat yourself again because you're promoting policies that failed back in the aughts. So, like I said, I don't know what there's only one good answer to that. And there wasn't a lot of daytime between him and Walz on that. Now, a couple of other things here. Walz, we know Walz is going to be bad because he just was horrible with a lot of things. Audio soundbite 16. when he was asked about firearms. This made me angry. Listen to this.
I got a 17-year-old, and he witnessed a shooting at a community center playing volleyball. Those things don't leave you. As a member of Congress, I sat in my office surrounded by dozens of the Sandy Hook parents, and they were looking at my 7-year-old picture on the wall. Their
he was saying that I own firearms and the Second Amendment is there, but our first responsibility is to our kids, is what he had said. And the way that he positioned it seemed as though he was suggesting that being a parent and owning a firearm are two incompatible things. I don't think you have to be through a mass casualty incident to understand the importance of your children or to understand the importance of defense. And I mentioned this online as well. I am very grateful for my Second Amendment right of self-defense as a mother. You know, I've had someone try to break into my home because they wanted to harm me because of my ideas. And I'm grateful that I had a rifle. Because guess what? That person was there for almost 12 minutes before the cops were. Love my police. A lot can happen in 12 minutes. And I'm glad. What if I had no means of protecting myself because I believed, as Tim Walz did, that somehow parenthood was incompatible with defense? You know, a lot of reasons why parents, particularly mothers, have firearms is so they can defend themselves and their children. I thought that that was an ignorant take that he had. I mean, I'm not surprised. It's Walz. He's a FUD. But I was just abhorrent. That was an abhorrent take. We have more to come. The latest on the strike. We're going to touch on the strike, and we got more on the hurricane relief. What is up with the helicopters? Apparently, a lot of privately owned choppers are helping out with assistance. But why is there not more happening? We're going to get into all of that and more as we roll into the people who help bring you free radio. It's our partners over at Kel-Tec. It's the P15. It's the lightest, thinnest double stack 9mm on the market. You've got two versions. You have the polymer version and you have the metal version. The metal version has the wood grip panels on a polymer version. Just get the damn gun. You know why? Because it's a nice concealable gun. It's nice. It's lightweight. It sends with two magazines. One's a 15-round magazine. Standard capacity for the wimps out there. Standard capacity. Minimal pinky extension. The other one's the 12-round. That's flush fit double stack mag that holds 12 rounds. If you want like the ultra concealability, tritium fiber optic front sight. Sweet trigger. I mean, it's a striker fire pistol from the people who literally invented the micro compact pistol category. For the everyman, that's the tiny little teeny witty bitty gun. Okay, you don't lose stopping power. It's a great gun. Get it, because you're probably going to need it if things keep going down this route. You can find it at Kel-Tec. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Great Florida-based company. America needs more companies like them. Find it at KelTecWeapons.com. It's called the P15. That stands for 15 pews, right? Standard capacity pews. K-E-L-T-E-C, weapons.com. Tell them that Dana sent you, for the love of all things holy.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Someone call Sam Jackson. A passenger thought it was okay to take a 10-foot Burmese python in his carry-on luggage. Yeah, it's a guy at Tashkent Airport in Uzbekistan. The guy was instructed to open his carry-on luggage. This was just 2 days ago. Last week. A little bit more than 2 days ago. He unzipped his bag and revealed a 10-foot-long little blonde python. Curled up asleep inside it. Sleeping, just having a little nap. Snake was having a nap. It was a 3-meter snake, and it was uncovered, and he was not allowed to take it as a carry-on. They said it was not declared. It was discovered. It was a tiger albino python. It's native to South and Southeast Asia. Because it was listed in the International Red Book, they have to import it, and they can't, you know, you just can't take it in. Do you think somebody's actually smuggling it? Or were they like dumb enough to think that's my pet? Because that's not like what I think of when you're trying to smuggle something. It means you're trying to evade security, right? You can't just put it in a duffel bag with a little bed and like walk. That just doesn't make sense. Sounds like it was a pet. A hyper-realistic inflatable alligator was rescued from a creek in Lebanon County. Oh, that's good. They saved that inflatable alligator. This is in Pennsylvania. A resident said that there was a gator in a North Cornwall Creek in... I can't... Why are there so many... What? Quatapalafalaya Creek. Yeah, that's right. And they immediately had to get law enforcement out there to get this gator out. And what they discovered, they said it was very realistic. I got to be honest with you. It's not. It's not a very you know those like gator floats that you get for your pool and they have handles on them? It was that. That's not realistic, gator. It's not hyper. Yeah, it's not hyper realistic. Good night. So Musk knew that X was overpriced when he got it. Now it's worth 25% less than what he paid for it. And that's because they're trying to kill it, the government, because they want to control it. We got a lot more on the way. The latest at the strikes. Iran, stick with us. The only Christian conservative cell phone service provider that we have. And with Patriot Mobile, you're going to get the absolute best coverage on all three major networks. And you're not going to have to worry about your money going to support all the things that you vote against at the ballot box, because that's not what they do. With Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support your enumerated rights and you support the right of parental involvement and the ability to determine what is or is not age appropriate, because they've been, they were in, just absolutely really we're grateful to what they've done in our area with their help with the school board races, because they got behind those parents groups, grassroots parent groups that were fighting to get control of their school boards so that they didn't have really inappropriate stuff in their kids' elementary libraries. And so when you support and work with Patriot Mobile, you're getting the best service. You can get a plan tailor-made to whatever you need. Your family of all size, business of all size, doesn't matter. Keep your phone or your and your number. Upgrade, the choice is yours. They have a 100% U.S.-based customer service team. They make it easy to switch. And when you visit patriotmobile.com/Dana, you get free activation using code Dana. Call 972-PATRIOT today. Get a free month of service when you use offer code Dana as well. Don't be fooled by the pretenders who cosplay about having the same coverage. Switch to the legit one. patriotmobile.com/Dana. 972-PATRIOT. Free month of service. Free activation using code Dana.
Make some common sense of the crazy headlines with the Dana Show podcast, your on-the-go guide for getting up to speed on today's most important stories. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or your favorite podcast platform.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. We're here at the bottom of this second hour, and we're going to get into the latest with Iran and Israel, as well as Hurricane Helene recovery, and then we're going to touch on the strike. Real quick, I want to play this isolated audio because I was talking about beware of slipping back to Bush 2.0, quote unquote, compassionate conservatism, which is a code word for big government, which is a code word for Democrat, because you can't have the government involved in everything. And we were talking about family leave and how businesses should not be involved in doing this unless they voluntarily choose to do so. We can't very well go and complain about government involvement and stuff and then beg the government to get involved in mandating business to provide accommodation for family planning. That's neither a conservative nor a constitutionalist perspective on that. And the reason I brought it up is because I actually thought, I thought Vance won the debate, but I did not think that this was his brightest moment. And I just wanted to play this really quickly so you have perspective on what I was talking about fully. Listen.
It's the heart of the Donald Trump economic plan. Cut taxes for American workers and American families. Cut taxes for businesses that are hiring and building companies in the United States of America, but penalize companies and countries that are shipping jobs overseas. That's the heart of the economic proposal. And I think what President Trump is saying is that when we bring in this additional revenue with higher economic growth, we're going to be able to provide paid family leave, child care options that are viable and workable for a lot of American families.
What?
Can you clarify how that will solve the child care shortage?
Well, because as Tim said, a lot of the child care shortage is we just don't have enough resources going into the multiple people who could be providing family care options. And we're going to have to, unfortunately, look, we're going to have to spend more money. We're going to have to induce more people to want to provide child care options for American families, because the reason it's so expensive right now is because you've got way too few people providing this very essential service.
Okay, so that's exactly what I was talking about. That is exactly it. What do you mean? Who is the we? And what is the how? You're going to have to spend more money and induce more people. Like I said, real quickly, and then I'm going to move on. Companies that want to offer childcare voluntarily to be competitive, that's their right. The government should not mandate that businesses do this. Again, it's the same big government stuff that was marketed under Bush 2.0 as quote-unquote compassionate conservatism. And the only answer to this is, number one, businesses can voluntarily do it if they so choose. Government shouldn't mandate this, because look, welfare is welfare, regardless of whether it's forced through corporate or if it's offered by the government as an entitlement. So the only correct answer is only businesses should determine voluntarily if they want to do this. And really, we have to stop taking in so much tax so that families can afford to get childcare, or they can afford to have a two-parent, one-income home should they so choose, if they want to be able to have a parent at home with their children. That is the only correct and acceptable answer on that. So that's what I was talking about. Everything that Wall said, I disagreed with. I just got to put that out there for clarity. All right, so I want to switch gears here, and I want to touch on this very interesting thing that I've been seeing with regard to the helicopters and the way that they have been, like the privately owned choppers, and how they've been responding to a lot of this. There was a very interesting piece that I was reading about the U.S. helicopter community. I love that we have a helicopter community. God bless America. Yeah. I've flown in a chopper. I've never flown a chopper per se. Kind of now I'm interested in it. But it talks about, like, for instance, in North Carolina, they have all of these privately owned choppers that are out there doing these rescue efforts. And it's amazing to see some of this stuff. And they've, I mean, the photos and the video, they're airlifting supplies. It's like the Cajun Navy, but like in the air. Cajun Air, right? Mm-hmm. Cajun Air. That's an air. Wouldn't you fly that airline? I would totally fly that airline.
Instead of peanuts, they give out gumbo or something?
Dude, here's your cup of gumbo. Now, we ain't giving you no peanuts up in here. You get a cup of gumbo. Oh, my gosh. Cajun Navy, come on. Y'all got to make that happen. Cajun Air. I would demand to fly Cajun Air everywhere. Oh, there's your slogan. Cajun Air, airware. There it is right there. So they have been going in and around trying to help all these people. And I know that there's also this... people were asking about Fort Bragg because there's a lot of helicopters at Fort Bragg, and people were asking, well, why are they not getting, involved? Why are they not getting, power to get out there, get supplies in? Because a lot of the people have been saying, well, our government aid is nowhere to be found, and they've got video of all of these helicopters that are privately owned, volunteering their time and their fuel. And they're running supplies because the roads are impassable. They're running supplies. They're rescuing people. They're dropping stuff up in the hills. I mean, it's just wild. And there was one guy who was told by the fire chief that if he went back, and he's a guy who owns a chopper, if he went back, they would arrest him. He had to leave this dude on the mountain. Why? Okay, I'm real confused about this. Why are some of these, it seems like some of these private choppers, why are some of them being deterred from doing this? Is there, I mean, you're in it's a natural disaster. It's an emergency zone. And people have been, you can see how people have been following like Flight Tracker and all this other stuff. And they can see how many government assets, like helicopters, government helicopters are operating with rescues. And they're able to filter out civilian and passenger aircraft. And people are wondering, it seems like there's more privately owned than there is government owned. Here's an interview with this guy who was saying that he was told he basically had to stop making these rescue efforts and dropping supplies. Listen to this. This is wild. Why?
Started helping with coordination. He gave me radio frequencies to coordinate with them on, set up a landing area for me to come back with the other victim. And in the middle of the whole conversation and them blocking the road off, I was greeted by the, at that time I didn't know, but Lake Lure fire chief or assistant chief maybe, and he shut down the whole operation. So at that point, I felt like the conversation wasn't going any further. And again, he asked me to leave, and I said, hey, I have no problem getting out of your area. If that's what you want us to do, we'll leave, no issue. At that point, I asked him, what was the reason I had to leave them there? And he said, again, you're interfering with my operation. I just need you to get out of the area. I said, sir, I don't know where you were trained at, but I know how my training is, and I'm not going to leave personnel behind. I'm going back to get my co-pilot. He said, if you turn around and go back up the mountain, you're going to be arrested. I said, well.
So I'll say this. I get it. If, you are, the firefighter EMT and you've got a rescue plan and resources in place and you don't want anyone interfering with that. But that's the question, isn't it? Because the assertion is that there wasn't a plan nor were there resources in place, right? That's the whole thing, right? So, and this is just one, apparently, one example, because emergency responders are so overstretched in these areas, it's insane. And I think that you would take that into account and would welcome or try to incorporate as a part of your plan people who are able to help out, who have the ability to get to these areas that are impassable due to landslides and busted up roads and all this stuff. And I get that, you know, you want to secure an area and you're trying to do everything. But again, a lot of these people are, a lot of these first responders are totally overstretched. I understand you don't want every Tom, Dick, and Harry coming up and getting involved in all that, but you need people with choppers because apparently there are not enough. And I think it's, you know, important, especially if part of your plan is making sure that you're rescuing people off the mountain and you don't have the fully available resources to do so. Why would you have people wait up on the mountains being stranded for days when you could have like privately owned choppers, people, and assist those people and organize them and use their resources, use them as assets and have them rescue people so that you're not stretched so thin? I feel like there's a better way to do this. And the crazy thing is that if we had a better, I think some of these, if we had a better response in some of these areas, I think that this conversation would be unnecessary. But that's, I mean, the devastation, I mean, oh my gosh, they still don't even really have estimates as to how much and what all is going to be required. I mean, it's just so, they're still just trying to ascertain the level of damage and save people. And I also think that the other issue with this is do you feel like there's not enough attention on this from national press? Like they talked about it and now I just feel like it's sort of fallen by the wayside. Am I being too sensitive with that?
No, you're not. I believe that this media has been consistently running cover for the left, and I think this is another example.
But do you think that they're not reporting on this as much because it's southeastern states that are mostly affected? I don't want to sound like I'm trying to cause a problem unnecessarily, but I do have to wonder why the coverage is so completely lopsided.
Well, I remember, and I put this story in your prep last night, that back in Hurricane Katrina, they couldn't immediately get to the area, right? And so when there was a lag in FEMA help and all of that, people were going all over the media and saying how George Bush hated black people and all of this stuff and made it a race issue and the whole nine. So if those rules apply to what we do today in how we respond in the media on this, then yes, it would look like, based on the lack of FEMA and obviously the lack of interest that both Kamala and Joe Biden had in this whole tragedy, apparently they hate white people and they hate people that vote mostly for Trump.
I mean, apparently Helene is already one of the deadliest, costliest storms to hit the United States. It dumped 40 trillion gallons of rain on the southeastern states. 40 trillion gallons. That's enough to fill Dallas Cowboys Stadium 51,000 times or Lake Tahoe just once. That's how much. Wow. Now, the reason I bring this up is because, and Steve made a good point, Hurricane Sandy got so much coverage. Not that it didn't, you know, deserve to get a lot of coverage. But you have Katrina, Harvey, Ian, Andrew, and Sandy was listed at number 4. But Helene is right now in the top 10. It's a bad hurricane. And the devastation seems like it's in multiple states and not just really concentrated on a couple. But there does seem to be, like, there's lopsided coverage because the media is mostly centralized in the Northeast. And anything that happens to the media just takes over, you know, the whole day. My gosh, you get a snowstorm and it's just, you know, wall-to-wall coverage. And you get major flooding like in Tennessee and there's like barely a blip. And now the recovery efforts for Hurricane Helene are just starting to slip past and they're rolling off their what they call above the fold. So when you get your newspaper and it's folded in half, all the most important stuff is above the fold so that you, before you even fold it, unfold it to be the full broadsheet, half broadsheet, then all the most important stuff was there. So above the fold is what they refer to. That's like the order of importance. It's already fallen below the fold. Now it's going on page 1A, 2A. So this is, it's, I don't know. I'm not trying to be overly sensitive, but it feels like, you know, considering some of the devastation, like in North Carolina, they got hit so bad and the landslides are horrific. One, and they're still trying to find people. There's still tons of people unaccounted. 159 fatalities so far. ABC had that 20 hours ago. It's probably more now. Florida peanut farmers say this is worse than Adelia. They say that they're dealing with devastating losses with the peanut crop. So it's, and they think that that Helene is going to join the five most damaging. It's technically in the top 10, but it's being estimated that it's going to join the five most damaging hurricanes of all time. We got a lot more to touch on, including the latest with Iran, Israel, and that strike, as we've been recapping the debate for you. Black Rifle Coffee. It is the best coffee that's out there. Nobody else comes close. And one of the reasons why I like it so much, in addition to it being veteran run and operated, veteran owned and operated, is that all of their roasts are so good. I mean, it's all so good. And you get, I mean, just the freshest, most innovative roast, and it's all done to, you know, precision excellence. And that's just what Black Rifle Coffee does. Now, they have a great offer for you right now. You can get the Complete Mission Fuel Kit Variety Sampler. It's a lineup of their classic blends. These are actually all my favorite. The Beyond Black, AK-47 Espresso, Silencer Smooth, the Just Black. Every flavor is amazing. It comes in a cool blue box, so it's a great gift. You know, if you know, have a friend or know somebody that likes coffee. And it's comes in the ground texture. You can also get, you know, because it's a sample, but you can also get each of these and each of these roasts in a whole bean K-cup ready to drink, all that good stuff. You can also join the coffee club. Pick your roast, how often you want it delivered, you know, to your doorstep, and you get free shipping. It's awesome. And you're going to save money, and it's going to be more affordable than anything you're going to find on grocery store shelves. It's over only at blackriflecoffee.com, that Complete Mission Fuel Kit Variety Sampler. Also join up with the coffee club, as I do, and get all your favorite brews delivered right to your porch with free shipping. Outstanding flavor and aroma only at blackriflecoffee.com. Make sure you use code Dana to save 20%. Code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com gets you 20% off.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Yeah, so got a couple things here. This I this is an older story. Hold on, I'll do this one. So a guy's son gets caught trespassing, right? Why is it always at a Walmart? I'm not kidding you. Like, every time I've got like a trespass story, it's always at Walmart. So a Florida man gets arrested because his son was trespassing at a Walmart. And when the dad showed up, Flagler County, he attacked the deputies who contacted him to get his kid. So Flagler County Sheriff's Office responded to multiple reports of juveniles causing disturbances in a Walmart. They were all under 16. They were riding bikes at the store, yelling, cursing, setting off car alarms. And deputies found the group, recognized the teens, contacted their parents. And one of the parents, this explains why the kid was doing what he was doing, 34-year-old Jonah Harrington from Palm Coast, arrived and immediately confronted law enforcement. He gets out, runs up to the deputy, and just shoves him. It's all on body cam footage. And dude, don't you know that he's, if you had to guess, like, was he wearing his hat with a straight bill and did he have like a goofy shirt on and, you know, look like he got a D-bag starter kit? The answer is yes. Yes, he did. Two other deputies tried to detain him, and Harrington punched one officer, resisted the efforts of another deputy to secure him in handcuffs. So then he tried to flee. He was apprehended after a struggle. And the sheriff said the apple doesn't fall from the tree. You know, we asked these parents to come pick up their kids because they were causing trouble, but this parent chose to attack our deputies instead. So now you see, right? He's right. It does not fall far from the tree. Can you imagine? God help my child. If the police called me and they were like, ma'am, you have to come get your child, I would turn into Granny Boots. Granny Boots would get real quiet and she'd point to a willow tree that she had in her front yard. You know, we killed this tree. She had 23 grandkids. We killed this damn tree. We had to go cut a branch off it with a pair of utility scissors. She would strip the leaves off with her hand and fold it and whoop us with it. I never got a whooping because I was an angel and I was, yep. And I was Granny Boots' favorite. So, but all my other cousins got beat. But that's like the scariest thing ever. I would show up with like a whole thatch of them things. Be like, you tell me where my kid is, officer. I will handle this situation. I'm just saying, golly, runs up and he's on. And you know, all these police, it's like you can see their body cam, their body cameras. Why would you do that? Third hour on the way. Stick with us. Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon here, Dana Lash. We've been going over a number of things following the latest with Hurricane Helene recovery efforts. Also, we've got coming up a discussion on Iran and Israel, and then the latest with the longshoremen strike. We've been recapping this debate, gone over some of the best and worst moments. Now, I talked about one of the worst moments, I thought, for Vance, although I think he won the debate because he was most coherent and he didn't talk about being friends with school shooters. This is where Walz fell apart here. I don't think Vance's answer on abortion was great either. And I bring that up because that's like a huge issue for the right. It's like guns, taxes, and babies. Guns, taxes, and babies. GTB. Not necessarily in that order. For some people, maybe it's BGD, BGT, or TBG. But we're just doing guns, babies, and guns, taxes, and babies. So the discussion about abortion, he was asked because... And again, Channel 347 DirecTV, find us on Rumble where the chat is, also on X. One of the big things that Democrats have had that they've struggled to get around is they try to paint Republicans as being extremists. When if you look at, I think there have been 9 major polls taken in like the span of, 6 years, maybe longer than that, that have dealt with the issue of abortion and how most people, including the majority of Democrats, and really this is what drives it, independents and Democrats, they're like, oh, we'll stop it at 15 weeks. Democrats wanted it to be literally on demand up to the moment of birth, and they also wanted the taxpayer to subsidize it. Now, I'm not just making that up. That was literally what the quote-unquote Women's Protection Act that they all co-sponsored in the Senate when Kamala Harris was also the head of the Senate. The president of the Senate, they all sponsor that. That was a big thing back in 2020 and going up into 2022. And so Walz now has to answer for his party on that. And the reason that this became a big issue is because you had Ralph Abortham, Northam, who was the former governor at the time over in Virginia. And he did a radio interview where he said that he actually supported it all the way up till the moment of birth. And then he included, he didn't want to provide care. And that's another thing that Walz flubbed on. So Audio Soundbite 12, Walz was asked, okay, well, what about any limitations on abortion as demand used as birth control? Because every state already protects the life of the mother in cases of rape and incest. And Walz could not give an answer to this. Listen.
Would you like to respond and also answer the question about restrictions?
Yeah, well, the question got asked and Donald Trump made the accusation that wasn't true about Minnesota. Well, let me tell you about this idea that there's diverse states. There's a young woman named Amber Thurman.
Oh, here we
she
go.
Happened to be in Georgia, a restrictive state. Because of that, she had to travel a long distance to North Carolina to try and get her care.
Okay,
Amber Thurman died.
Okay, can we pause that for real quick? Because that's a lie. I want to point out that this is we'll come back to it. Just save that right there because we're going to come back to it. So he's talking about the case of this woman, and Lorraine wrote about this over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. She's got all the cases up there, and she talked about the Amber Thurman, that woman who is from Georgia. Amber Thurman was, she had gone to get the abortion pill, and she went to get the abortion pill. She took 2 of them, and then she ended up going into sepsis, and she started bleeding, and I don't know why she waited for hours to go to the hospital to help with this, because now it was, I mean, she aborted her baby with this pill. I don't know why she waited that long, but she took the abortion pill. She took 2 of them. And then when she went to the hospital, for whatever reason, they were late in getting her some care. But they blame an abortion ban for her death. But it's an irresponsible lie because she legally acquired abortion pills. Amber Thurman legally acquired abortion pills. She discovered she was pregnant with twins. She sought an abortion as a form of birth control. And she was over 6 weeks pregnant. Georgia has a 6 week limitation. She was over 6 weeks pregnant. She took one abortion pill in North Carolina, another abortion pill in Georgia. And they literally warn you when you take this pill, and it says that it's widely reported that you could wind up in the hospital because they cause serious complications. And guess what? She developed serious complications. She was vomiting blood and she developed sepsis, but she literally waited not just hours. She waited for days before she went to the hospital. And what Democrats were trying to falsely say is that the hospital waited to perform a DNC. That's actually a lie. Georgia's law that explicitly allows DNCs as a treatment following a miscarriage. It's the 2023 Code of Georgia, Title 16, Crimes and Offenses, subsection 16.1.1 and 16.17.10, gets into Chapter 12, Article 5, Section 16.12.141, Restrictions on the Performance of Abortions, Availability of Records, Civil Cause of Action, and Affirmative Defenses. And it literally gets into everything from ectopic pregnancies, detectable human heartbeats, all of it, medical emergencies, medically futile, spontaneous. It gets into literally every aspect of it. This law does point out, yes, you do DNCs as a treatment following a miscarriage. She was having a miscarriage at that point. So they were trying to misconstrue the law and say that she wasn't allowed to get help and that's what killed her. That's not what killed her. Her waiting for days to go to the hospital, getting sepsis and vomiting blood. I don't know. I just think if you're vomiting blood, you might want to go to the ER instead of waiting days. So that was a lie. That was an absolute lie. Okay, go ahead and with the other. I'm sorry, Juan. I didn't mean to interrupt like the video, but I'm like, I had to stop there immediately. Go ahead.
To try and get her care. Amber Thurman died in that journey back and forth. The fact of the matter is, how can we as a nation say that your life and your rights, as basic as the right to control your own body, is determined
on
geography?
You can't control your own body. Like, no one's forcing people to have sex when you're pregnant. Had Amber Thurman. No one's doing that. Some of these other cases, by the way, I wish that Vance would have been familiar with that case so he could have just nipped it right there. I think he should have been prepared a little bit more with that. And he wasn't. And that's where I was a little bit like, come on. They could have, I think, really, really verbally beat the snot out of him with that. But he also lied, and I'm going to get into 13. If we can speed 13 up a little bit, we can come in like in the middle of it. Because Walz was being questioned about the bill that he signed that removed a requirement for doctors to preserve the life of an infant. I want to go back to, like, I think it was 2006 or 7. In Illinois, they had what they called the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. That's when Barack Obama was the state senator in Illinois. So this is actually 2006, I think. And he voted against it. He was one of the big votes against that bill. What the Born Alive Infant Protection Act was doing was, it was one of the first, similarly, one of the first of its kind in the nation that was about codifying health care for an infant that survived an abortion, so that they wouldn't be denied care, the baby wouldn't be denied care. What Tim Walz did, he did something very, very similar. He actually removed the requirement that demanded doctors offer treatment after survived abortions, and that they don't have to report it because there was a reporting requirement to the state. He fought to remove that. He was questioned about that here. Listen to this.
Yes, Governor, please respond.
Look, this is one where there's always something there. This is a very simple proposition. These are women's decisions to make about their healthcare decisions and the physicians who know best when they need to do this. Trying to distort the way a law is written to try and make a point, that's not it at all.
What was I wrong about, Governor? Please tell me, what was I wrong about?
That is not the way the law is written. Look, I've given this advice on a lot of things, that getting involved, that's been misread, and it was fact-checked at the last debate. But the point on this is there's a continuation of these guys to try and tell women or to get involved. I use this line on this, just mind your own business. On this, things work best when Roe versus Wade was in place. When we do a restoration of Roe, that works best. That doesn't preclude us from increasing funding for children.
Literally, under Walz, babies who were born alive in botched abortions it was all right to deny them any kind of treatment after. And then Walz not only supported that, Walz not only pushed for it, but he removed the requirement for doctors to report the babies who survived and then did not make it. That is a true thing. And the fact that I wish it would have been a little bit more aggressively pursued. There's no way around it. I mean, that's literally what happened. In fact, on his watch, 8 infants, as he's governor, 8 infants were born alive. They survived botched abortions. None of them received any care. There was no attempt made to preserve their lives. They didn't even receive basic comfort care. They were just left unattended. And they also, up until 2023 in Minnesota, they did not punish the neglect of infants who were born alive who survived abortions. These babies would have survived with care. And they changed the reporting requirement. So Walz's issue, he didn't care so much about the dead babies. He didn't want that to be reported to the state, so that was on his watch. So he had the law changed to eliminate the reporting requirement. That is an absolute fact. It doesn't matter if you're for abortion or against abortion. That's the truth of the matter. Bottom line, that is the law is up there. Minnesota was the rare law that stated that born alive abortions had to be publicly reported. But it was a very uncomfortable statistic for Democrats. So he worked with a Democrat legislature in 23 and they eliminated the reporting requirement. And they also eliminated the state's legal obligation for doctors, for nurses, and for medical professionals to administer life-saving care. It was included in the signed bill. It was SF 2995. So that was a lie. That's an absolute lie. He also, by the way, another quick thing. I didn't want to go back to the guns thing, but I wanted to point out he also made the false accusation that the CDC was barred from researching as a health issue, quote unquote, gun violence. That's a lie. And I've written about that extensively. The CDC is barred from using taxpayer dollars for political advocacy for or against the Second Amendment, which I think is incredibly reasonable. They are barred from politicizing using your tax dollars this. But notice that he omitted how in this there are receipts of this, and I've written about this, and so have a number of other outlets. There were emails that were made public showing the gun control lobby, everyone from Everytown to Bloomberg to the Brady Group, that were pressuring the CDC via email to remove from the CDC's website the defensive gun usage statistics, showing just how many times firearms in the hands of law-abiding people were used in defense of their lives, in protection of themselves or loved ones. And the emails in that explicitly verbatim stated from these gun control advocates that they were upset that the use and presentation of defensive gun usage statistics on the CDC website were a complication to their anti-gun narrative. And so the CDC complied most happily and removed it. So if you want to have a discussion about politicizing things or being barred from doing something, let's look at how defensive gun usage was removed by repeated harassing requests of the gun control lobby.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
A woman was arrested and accused of a 0.34 blood alcohol content while driving on the airport taxiway. No big whoop. It's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. She was accused of driving drunk. Just the other day, they got a call on my birthday of a lady who was driving a silver Nissan on the taxiway. She's blocking all the outbound planes. Police, though, were unable to find her when they arrived. And then the next day, they got another call that literally 2 days in a row. How in the world does that happen? First day, they get a call. She blocking several. They couldn't find her when they arrived. Then they responded to a similar call the next day after, again, air traffic control said there's a drunk driver in a silver Nissan blocking the runway. Planes trying to land. Pilot said he was taxiing his airplane when he came up on the Nissan. He actually had to get out of the plane and try to get the driver to move out of the way. And they saw the car full of beer cans. They arrested Bonnie Campbell for a second offense, felony aggravated DUI. She was taken to the hospital for treatment. 18 empty beer cans inside her SUV, along with a cardboard box of Coors Light, an empty six-pack, and a garage bag full of other beer cans. She was unsteady on her feet, bloodshot eyes, slurred speech, 34 on this 0.34 on the blood alcohol breathalyzer test, 4 times the legal limit. Wow. So she told police she was visiting family who got a, who have a hangar at the airport. And jail records show her home address is in Texas. Just wow. Fat Bear Week. A bear death caught on camera postpones Fat Bear Week plans. That's an actual thing. Fat Bear Week. It's Fat Bear Week. Two Alaskan grizzlies got into a fight and one of the animals was killed. And it was captured on a live stream run by explore.org. And they were like, oh my gosh, another bear killed a bear killed another one on the river. So now they're fat bear off. There you go. Stick with us.
On the go and need a quick news fix with a fun twist? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth Podcast for bite-sized informative episodes perfect for your busy schedule on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
How is the left going to deal with the cognitive dissonance that comes with Me Too, believe all women, and then the, second dude slapping a chick hard enough to spin her around back in 2012 in Cannes Film Festival? That story that's out today. And by the way, there are people running down. They've got photos of this, of our video of him with this chick arriving at the 2012 Cannes Film Festival, which, by the way, why was he going there? I don't even know what he does. What does he do? I don't really, I'm too lazy to look it up myself because I don't care. But he was accused of forcefully slapping his girlfriend. They've been dating for 3 months for flirting with another man at this gala. And they were in the valet line at the Cannes Film Festival. And I don't know, man. I don't know how he's redefining masculinity by impregnating the nanny while he was married to his first wife and then slapping a chick in 2012. Wait, didn't he? He didn't even marry Kamala Harris until like what, 2014, 2016?
Right.
But she was like, I helped him raise his kids. What?
Is she a nanny?
No. I don't know. I got questions. I got some questions. That's all I'm saying. Just, you know, how is the left going to deal with that? I mean, these are the people who are like, Brett Kavanaugh literally raped everybody. It's better to say who wasn't raped by Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, it was like that. Remember how bad it was? It was so bad. I'm just saying, you know, I don't know. I don't know how the left is going to deal with that. They are just weird. We have the two weirdest candidates on the left and their spouses are weird. That Gwen lady, dude, I for real think that she is an actual psychopath. Have you seen her eyes? Look at her eyes. Or don't, not too close. All the millennial dudes, actually dudes in general, Zoomers, all of you, but particularly of the younger demographic, you see a chick across the room that's got eyes like that, you avert thy glance, sir, because she cray. All right. Like, I'm saving you so much drama and I am not wrong. Your sister here is not wrong. Your sister in conservatism and Christ is not wrong. You see a chick that's got eyes like that and she gives you the look from across the room. Avert thy glance because you don't want that crazy. And Kane, I'm not wrong, right? Those chicks are like that. They got them crazy eyes.
Seems to be a common thread.
Yeah. It's like the good Lord above is like, this one's weird, so we're going to give them the eyes to match. I mean, as though you couldn't tell when she was like, I love the smell of burning tires and all that. And then what was the other thing that she did? Turn the page!
Right. She talks to the crowd, like most Democrats do, as though they're toddlers.
It's, yeah, she had her whole, like, turn the page. Can you say it with me? It reminded me of that episode of, it's SCH, Schitt's Creek, the television show, where Moira Rose was trying to tell her son David how to fold in the cheese, and she had no idea how to cook, and they were following her grandmother's, like, enchilada recipe or whatever. She's like, David, now you have to fold in the cheese. And he's like, okay, what does that mean? What does it mean to fold in the cheese? Well, you just fold in the cheese. And he's like, you keep saying that to me, but what does that mean? Fold in the cheese. I don't even think you know what that means. Just fold it in. It's the same thing. I got the same vibe. Turn the page. I just want to throw the book at you. That's all I want to do. Oh my gosh. She just seems to okay. Maybe this is me being weird. Let me go on a little off-road adventure real quick. Are you weirded out when you meet people who are too joyfully nice?
Yeah, actually.
Think about it. Not like people who are courteous, but people who are like, oh my gosh, hello. Oh
oh, you are so lovely. Welcome. It is so good to see you. That creeps me out so bad because I'm not maybe, you know, sometimes when I have a thought, it's not in the box or anywhere near the box. It's way outside the box, out into the woods, down a path near the river. And I'm just like, they're going to eat me. That's like my first thought, right? Doesn't she give off that vibe?
She does. She does.
Yeah. It's like, it's totally weird. I get so nervous about that. And people are super nice, right? Just think about it. Like, how many times have you, and those people are usually psycho killers. Tim Walz is kind of like that too. You know, like all in person, he's all like, well, you know, I'm just that knucklehead, yuck, yuck. But then, you know, behind the scenes, you know, he's like, the party's at the floor. He's like super nuts. He's super nuts. You know, it's true. Come on. I just, neither of them are, I feel like, you know, they're like the type of people that they invite you to a dinner party. You're like, to eat me? Like, why? Because you're crazy. But I'm never wrong. These people are always nuts. I look at Doug Emhoff and I feel like he's trying too hard to be the second banana. You know what I mean? Well, I'm just a wife guy. Were you a wife guy when you were on top of your nanny? Just a wife guy. Were you a wife guy when you were slapping that chick in line at the Cannes Film Festival valet? Huh?
Did we go from the Talking Heads to the Drowning Pool in one reference?
We did. You're correct. Psycho killer. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 better. Yes, we did. We did. Then it's full circle. There you go. Are you impressed yet, our son? Are you impressed, Steve?
Yeah, very much so.
But you know what I mean? Like, is he a wife guy? What is that? That's what normal people would call a husband, but the left has to make up cutie little terms for everything, right? Yeah, it sounds so lame.
Okay.
I'm like, you just sound like a female copulatory organ. Stop it. You can't deal with it. All right. Iran and Israel. Just going to switch gears here. There's no other better way to segue. So we're just going to go through it. So, I just think, and like I said, we've been following everything and waiting to hear because you have... Iran that says that they're just, you know, they're gonna strike back. Israel said that they could actually, they're considering just ending their nuclear program. I do wonder why, out of all the times now, you know, Iran has decided we're not gonna act through a proxy, Houthis or Hezbollah or Hezbollah and Hamas. We're not gonna act through any of these proxies. We're just gonna do it ourselves because now they're opening themselves up to full, you know, aggression. The UN, the completely worthless UN, they called for halting the escalation in the Middle East, guys. The United Nations has weighed in. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres announced the escalation of tensions. He denounced it and he said that we need a ceasefire. Who are you telling to ceasefire, you tool bag? Well, I condemn it. We need a ceasefire. Who? To tell Iran to cease the fire. This was not an all-out war until they started ceasefiring. They started firing and not ceasing through Lebanon. What are you doing? So he released a stupid statement. And as a result, he is now persona non grata and he's banned from entering Israel. According to Israeli Foreign Minister Yisrael Katz, he declared that General Antonio Guterres is persona non grata, banned him from entering the country because he did not categorically condemn Iran's missile attack on Israel, which he didn't. He's correct. The cowardly UN Secretary General just said, quote, this must stop. We absolutely need a ceasefire. I condemn the broadening of the Middle East conflict with escalation after escalation. That's what he said. He added, an all-out war must be avoided in Lebanon at all costs, and sovereignty and territorial integrity of Lebanon must be respected. Direct quote. Whoa, you're missing a country here, dude. They had no beans to pick until they got attacked again. What is with these people? Blank the UN. Blank the UN. It is the most worthless, ridiculous organization. Oh, but Dana, we need it at least to keep up the appearance that we're behaving civilly with each other. And wouldn't you want the United States to control it and instead of it being in another nation? Maybe I could be prevailed upon with that sentiment 10 years ago. Okay, maybe 15 years ago, but not anymore because this is worthless. I mean, they're condemning. Notice how they can't even bring themselves to mention Israel. Well, you know, the territorial integrity of Lebanon must be respected. What about the territorial integrity of Israel? They won't even mention Iran. They're just like, poor Lebanon. What about Iran that's using Lebanon as a launching base for all of this? What about the Druze people who have been completely attacked by Hezbollah and all of this, all of these Iranian proxies in Lebanon? What about that? I mean, they can't even bring themselves to condemn Iran, and they can't bring themselves to defend Israel's territorial integrity. Burn all of it. I'm done with all of it. This guy, this UN Secretary General, ought to be dragged out of his offices in downtown cushy building there in Manhattan. Every time I'm in Manhattan on my way to LaGuardia, I got to go past, and well, depending on what part of Midtown I'm coming from, I got to go past the UN. You can just feel the evil that emanates from that building. It's just worthless. So, yeah, I would say that he's persona non grata as well. He added Israel is going to continue to defend its citizens and maintain its status with or without Antonio Guterres. Well, he's absolutely correct on that. I mean, I can't even imagine. They said, oh, we need to. The Secretary General demanded that the international community support the $426 million humanitarian appeal launched today in Beirut. Why don't you pay for that? You know, why don't you demand that Iran pays for it? Because Iran did this. Iran did all of this. And the Iranian people, by the way, this is the one time I differentiate them from Gaza. Because Gazans voted for Hamas. They overwhelmingly love Hamas. Poll after poll, they love them some Hamas. Hamas was so damn popular, they were going to win elections in the West Bank too. But it's not the same in Iran. Those people have tried time and time again to stand up. Most recently, the biggest one was the Green Revolution. Well, to date, modern time, the Green Revolution went under Obama, Biden, and Obama turned a deaf ear to them. People in the streets protesting. You know why they covered their faces with whatever they could get their hands on? Not because they were trying to be trendy douchebags like Black Bloc and everything over here in the United States, because their Iranian Revolutionary Guard was going and killing their family if they found out that they had a member of their family in the street protesting the regime. They were sniping protesters on rooftops. Do you remember Nita? The beautiful young woman who was shot in the head by a sniper, by a member of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. She wasn't even actually part of the protests. Her and her father were in the car driving back home for something. They saw the protest. They parked the car to the side of the road. They got out and they walked forward to get a closer view. She wasn't even participating, but it appeared to the guard member who shot her that she was, and she got sniped through the head. All on video. She fell to the sidewalk and was dead in minutes, in seconds, actually. Her blood streaming out behind her on the sidewalk. Yeah, that's what happens in Iran. The people... This is one of the very rare instances in which I separate the people from the regime, because they have tried time and time again. But they don't get the support from the United States that United States gives to Hamas and Hamas's supporters. No, my gosh, the United States put up a damn floating port to give more supplies to Hamas. But they were completely MIA for Iranians during the Green Revolution. By the way, I saw a picture of Jimmy Carter wheeled out in a wheelchair. What was he seeing? Was it like Blue Angels? What was it?
Yeah, was that a chair? Was that like a gurney?
Or something. Because he celebrated his 100th birthday. How sad is it that he may not live to see the absolute poo-cano that he created in Iran and the Middle East when he opened that Pandora's box with the Ayatollah and the Shah and all that? How sad that he may not live long enough to see that come full circle, huh?
Make some common sense of the crazy headlines with the Dana Show podcast, your on-the-go guide for getting up to speed on today's most important stories. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or your favorite podcast platform.
Welcome back to the radio program. It's your professional radio lady, lovable curmudgeon Dana Lash with you as we close out this third hour. I'm not going to take Kane's Today in Stupidity cut, although it is fabulous.
I have plenty, though, honestly.
No, 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 because you were very protective of it, so I'm allowing you to keep it.
Was I? What were the signs that I was very protective
of? You got Gwen Walls' eyes.
Did I?
Your eyes morphed into Gwen Walls.
Wow.
And I was temporarily scared.
Well.
I was like, well, there it is right there. That's true, then I don't he blame went
you.
Crazy.
Yeah, if that's true, I don't blame you at all then.
Yeah, right. I mean, not even messing with that. But we got that strike that's ongoing so far. We're just going to watch everything get expensive as everybody dukes it out, and we'll have more on that as we follow up on that tomorrow. So far, there's not a heck of a lot of development with it, just people on the lines. We'll see. Also, make sure you sign up at Substack Chapter and Verse, because I'll have some stuff out. Any kind of polling that we get following the VP debate, I'll make sure to include it in your newsletter. Although, I really don't think it's going to move the needle all that much. I really don't. I think people at this point, especially when you come to the number two guys, they're pretty much set in their mind what they're going to do. You know? All right, go ahead and play your very protected. You're protected to this. Go ahead and play.
All right, this is Tim Walz. You know, he was kind of pressed on this last night of the debate.
When he lied.
And he didn't misspeak. He
lied.
He lied. And this is him addressing that as the press just minutes ago asked him about it.
Yeah, look, I have my dates wrong. I was in Hong Kong in China in 1989. That move from Hong Kong into China, it was profound for me. That was the summer of democracy. I said it's where I understood how sacred democracy was. It's what encouraged
this
me.
This is him trying to explain it away as though he misspoke because it was the same year, I guess. But I remember where I was during the Challenger explosion. I remember where I was during 9/11. He doesn't remember where he was during the Tiananmen
Especially
Square.
Especially since he got married on the date because it was so important to him.
So
remember? Yeah, I mean, he picked that day because he got so, it was very important to him.
More intentional than stupid.
Yeah, I'm telling you what. Make sure you find us YouTube, Facebook, like and subscribe. Sign up over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. I will be back behind the mic with you tomorrow. Have a great evening.